Chapter 13. Saturday, 5:22 p.m. When they arrived back at the Yeager house, Lucy wasn't surprised to see that Walden had anticipated her needs. She and Burroughs found him sitting at the dining room table, an Art Deco glass and chrome monstrosity that could seat 12, leafing through the family photo albums. "Got anything?" she asked, taking the chair beside him and reaching for a stack of prints. She flipped through them, all of Melissa in her modeling days, gaunt and hungry-looking, her body almost as flat as a boy's. These weren't professional shots. They were candid pictures, presumably taken by Gerald. "Plenty more like that," Walden said, indicating the numerous shots of Melissa. "Not so many of the kid." "Not too surprised," Burroughs said. "Turns out dad's into boys these days." Walden raised an eyebrow. "Legal boys," Lucy clarified. "Barely. Where's the mom?" "Convinced her to take a shower. Change clothes. She's been real quiet since you left. The sheriff sent 2 deputies to camp out for the duration. They're handling all communications through their command center. And we've got Mom's sister from Philly coming to stay with her. She wasn't real happy about that, though." "The body in Murraysville wasn't hers," Burroughs told Walden. "But Ashley's wallet was found nearby, and someone definitely didn't want this body to be identified quickly. Think they were trying to pull a switch? Make us think Ashley was dead?" Lucy looked up at that. "Not unless they think we're blind. The girls were the same general build and coloring, but what kind of idiot wouldn't notice the piercings?" "An adolescent idiot," Burroughs said, apparently channeling Nick. "Someone nervous, exhilarated with getting away with murder, not thinking clearly." "You think the kid is working with the unsub?" Walden asked. His face was its usual impassive blank slate, but his eyes had narrowed ever so slightly.
"Or she is the unsub."
"I'm just saying, don't assume anything," Burroughs replied. They all nodded to that. It was Cop 101. Trust no one, assume nothing. Still, it wasn't a leap in logic Lucy was ready to make. She glanced through the windows to where the butt-ugly command center still sat. "Any problems?"
"Nope. They're doing a pretty good job of coordinating everything. As long as Dunmar has the press's ear, he's happy."
"Fine with me." "Did you eat?" He seemed surprised by the question.
"Yeah, had some pizza."
"Good." She shivered in the cold house and didn't think it was from the air conditioning. "Gather up this stuff and write out a receipt. I'll go tell Mom we're leaving." She turned to Burroughs. "You want to tag along? We can always use an extra pair of eyes."
"You're gonna let little old me in that big fancy federal building of yours?"
he said, with wide-eyed innocence, batting his lashes.
"I thought you feds never asked for help from us local yokels."
Lucy smiled at his use of the term.
"This one does. But only if you don't have anything better to do. Got some dirty socks that need washing. Guess they can wait."
Walden left, hauling the photo albums with him. Burroughs stood by as Lucy searched for her car. She clicked the remote, but no chirp answered her. The cul-de-sac was empty of cop cars except for Burroughs's Impala, the dreaded Mobile Command Center, Dunmar's Expedition, and a plum Burrough squad. The other official vehicles had been replaced by news vans, cameramen at the ready.
"Where did you leave it?"
he asked, barely hiding his amusement. "I left it with a local yokel, an officer from Plumborough PD," she told him. Shadows were lengthening, transforming the tall, boxy houses into grim, gothic strongholds. She jogged down to the end of the street where the initial police barricade had been. The Subaru sat a block away, parked at the curb in front of a fire hydrant. Burroughs laughed.
2-1 he left you a ticket."
She ignored him, still uncertain of what to make of the detective's constant hovering. He'd been helpful,
but also attentive above and beyond interagency cooperation. Lucy's cell phone rang. Guardino here. LT, I got something from the cell records. Taylor's voice, loud, buzzed with excitement. Dozens of messages from some guy, screen name of Draco. They end about a month ago, but I traced the guy, and he's in Pittsburgh. Real name is Fagley, Robert Fagley. Give me the address. She repeated it to Burroughs, who scribbled it into his notebook. He grabbed his cell phone as she spoke with Taylor. Background? Nada. Clean slate. Kid's only 17, though. There could be something in a sealed juvie record. She glanced at Burroughs, who was working his own phone. Nothing from us. Guys at Zone 5 don't show any history with the address, either. What about her computer? She asked Taylor. Still working on it. Oh, yeah, that ICE guy Fletcher's pissed he has to work tomorrow. Even tried to con me into going instead. Said he'd come in and work Ashley's computer for us. Just what she needed. Cyber nerds in a turf war. You saying you need help? Nah, I'm good. Collared some of the high-tech task force guys to help with the minor stuff. We've got pizza coming. This isn't a party, Taylor. The high-tech computer crimes task force was where Taylor had worked before he left to attend Quantico and become a full agent. Do you need Fletcher or not? I can get ICE to sign off if you think he'd be helpful. This guy isn't even an agent or a computer forensic specialist. He's just a glorified desk jockey. Taylor still suffered from FNG syndrome, on top of an already overly healthy ego. So were you until this year, she reminded him. If you need him, call him. Either way, he still has to work the UC op tomorrow. No, seriously, boss, I'm in the zone here. I can handle it, honest. A girl's life may depend on it, she reminded him as she reached the Subaru. She was relieved when he took a minute to digest that before replying. I'll think about it. Don't worry, we'll bring her home, LT. She opened her car door and suppressed an oath. Nowicki had left her car unlocked. Taylor's voice still prattled in her ear, something about sectors and frags. Lucy reached below the driver's seat, checked her backup Glock 27 that was hidden there. Magazine was intact, one round still chambered. The seat was moved back, probably to accommodate the six-something uniformed officer when he parked the car. She readjusted it to fit her 5'5 frame, but then paused. Son of a bitch! She didn't realize she'd said it out loud until Taylor went silent. What's wrong, LT? Hang on a second, Taylor. The passenger seat was moved back as well, just far enough for someone to get comfortable while they rifled through her glove box. Lucy didn't keep anything personal in there, kept her registration and insurance papers with her driver's license in her wallet. An image of Megan sitting in the seat this morning, a slip of paper in her fingers. Shit. She reached over to the compartment on the passenger door, found the doctor's bill from this morning, with Megan's name, their address, and phone number printed oh so neatly on it. Folded into it was a business card, belonging to Cindy Ames. On the back was drawn a smiley face with hearts for eyes. Lucy scrunched the card into a wad of sharp edges, squeezing it into her fist. Burroughs had pulled his car up beside hers, waiting. He rolled down his window. What's up? That reporter, Ames. You said she put your family on the news? She'd really sink that far, endanger a couple of kids that way? A vertical crease formed between his eyebrows as he frowned. Yeah, she really would. I'm going to have to play hardball with her. My car's been searched by her. You can't know that. She left her calling card. She tossed the balled-up business card through the window at him and raised her phone once more. Taylor, I need you to track down the station manager for... She looked to Burroughs. WDDE, Channel 2. He supplied. Track them down and act real formal. Tell them you have a situation, that I was witness to a public. More than two people being public. And on the record conversation where one of their reporters, Cindy Ames, committed libel. You mean slander, Taylor said. Libels in writing. What are you, a lawyer? She asked, then remembered he was. Had his J.D., although he'd never practiced law or taken the bar exam. And his Ph.D. and an M.B.A. Damn whiz kid. So I'm, like, going undercover? He bubbled. A 34-year-old whiz kid puppy. No, she said in a tone that usually made Megan jump. You are not going undercover. You are representing the Bureau in an extremely delicate situation. Tell the manager that while I would prefer not to testify unless he removes this particular reporter from the story, I may be forced to go public. Make sure he knows we have Ashley's safety foremost in mind and appreciate his cooperation. All that jazz. Oh, cool. A con job. Should I say I'm the SAC? No, Assistant Special Agent in Charge would be more believable, wouldn't it? Or I could... Taylor! He kept rambling. Taylor! Yeah? Burroughs and I are headed over to Fagley's. I want you to take however much caffeine you drink and cut it in half. All right? Yeah. Sure. But what? She started the Subaru and waved Burroughs into the lead. I don't drink caffeine, LT. It's bad for... She hung up and followed Burroughs. What would Vixen do? Became Ashley's new mantra as she tried to gain control of the situation. Vixen would never surrender, for starts. Okay, then neither would she. After all, she was Vixen. That was just a game, playing, a contrarian voice echoed through her mind. Ashley shook it off. Her fingers curled with the desire to cut, slice, just once, please. But she denied herself the pleasure. Vixen didn't cut. She killed. First, know your enemy. Call him Mr. Skanky Pants. He thought this out, prepared, planned ahead. But what about Bobby? Had Mr. Skanky Pants prepared for Bobby? Bobby's either dead or out there thinking you stood him up. Either way, forget about him. He's no good to you. The voice was Vixen's, all calm, cool, collected. The killing machine skulking in the shadows, hunting. But Ashley couldn't let go of Bobby's face. Pulled it up in her mind. He wouldn't give up. That just wasn't in him. So then he's dead. Just like those girls who came before you, Vixen continued in her merciless drone. What else did you think that stench was? Skanky Pants has killed before. He's planning to kill you next unless you move your ass and find a way out of here. Ashley had blocked out the odor that engulfed the room, but suddenly it was back, smothering her, dirt thrown on a grave. A shallow grave, Vixen taunted. Ashley rocked back and forth, gnawing on her fingernails. Not the thumb, the sharp one, that one she saved. But the others were fair game, all bitten down to the quick, ragged and torn. It wasn't as good as cutting. She pulled her fingers from her mouth. Wolves and coyotes gnawed their legs off when caught in a trap. So did foxes. A focused calm seized her. She stroked the inside of her left wrist, feathering old scars and the fresh welt that still ached with satisfying memory. Bending her leg, she inched her sock off, tugging against the tight restraint that held it in place. The wire cable sat right above the bones jutting out from either side of her ankle, resting against her bare flesh. She couldn't get a regular finger between it and her skin. But her pinky finger she could jam in. Not much room, but she would make it work. Poking, prodding, taking mental measurements, she decided it wouldn't be necessary to cut off the entire foot. First, she'd try lubrication. See if she can move the cable below the ankle joint. Then she might need to trim a little of the padding around her heel. That was all. The picture in her mind didn't scare her or gross her out. Instead, it intrigued her. No way she can do all that with one fingernail. How long would it take to chew it off? Could a person even do that? Last resort, she promised herself. First, the simple things. She slashed her nail along the skin above the cable, the searing pain a release, bringing her body and mind together in a sharply focused instant. She was alive. She was in control, and she was going to stay that way, no matter what it took.